"He's tired, that's what it is," said Carrot. "He's been running around overseeing things for days. Night and day watches. You know what a hands-on person he is." "Let's hope the patrician will agree to let him stay that way. Oh, his lordship wouldn't... he wouldn't, would he?" Laughter was starting. Vimes had started to toss the truncheon from one hand to the other. "He can make his sword spin 3 times and still catch it." Vimes' head turned. He looked up. His truncheon clattered onto the cobbles and rolled into a puddle unheeded. Then he started to run. Carrot stared at him and then tried to see what the man had been looking at. "On top of the barbican," he said, "in that window. Isn't that someone up there? Excuse me, excuse me, sorry, excuse me." He began to push his way through the crowd. Vimes was already a small figure in the distance, his red cloak flying out after him. "Well, there's a lot of people watching the parade from high places," said Angua. "What's so special about..." "No one should be up there," said Carrot, starting to run now he was free of the crowd. "It's all sealed up." Angua looked around. Every face was turned towards the street theatre, and there was a cart nearby. She sighed and strolled behind it, wearing an expression of suspicious nonchalance. There was a gasp, a faint but distinctly organic sound, a muffled yelp, and then the clank of armour hitting the ground. Vimes didn't know why he ran. It was a sixth sense. It was when the back of the brain picked up out of the ether that something bad was going to happen, and didn't have time to rationalise, and just took over the spinal cord. No one could get to the top of the barbican. The barbican had been the fortified gateway in the days when Ankh-Morpork didn't regard an attacking army as a marvellous commercial opportunity. Some parts were still in use, but the bulk of it was 6 or 7 stories of ruin without stairs that any sensible man would trust. For years it had been used as an unofficial source of masonry for the rest of the city. Bits of it fell off on windy nights. Even gargoyles avoided it. He was aware that far behind him the noise of the crowd became a lot of shouting. One or two people screamed. He didn't turn round. Whatever was going on, Carrot could take care of it. Something overtook him. It looked like a wolf would look if one of its ancestors had been a long-haired Clatchian hunting dog, one of those graceful things that were all nose and hair. It bounded ahead and through the crumbling gateway. The creature was nowhere to be seen when Vimes arrived, but the absence was not a matter that grabbed at his attention because of the more pressing presence of the corpse, lying in a mess of fallen masonry. One of the things Vimes had always said... that is to say, one of the things he said he always said, and no one disagrees with the commanding officer, was that sometimes small details, tiny little details, things that no one would notice in ordinary circumstances, grab your senses by the throat and scream, "See me!" There was a lingering, spicy scent in the air, and in the gap between a couple of cobblestones was a clove. It was 5 o'clock. Vimes and Carrot sat in the patrician's outer office, in silence, except for the irregular ticking of the clock. After a while, Vimes said, "Let me have a look at that again." Carrot obediently pulled out the small square of paper. Vimes looked down at it. There was no mistaking what it showed. He tucked it into his own pocket.
Why do you want to keep it, sir?"
"Cape what?" said Vimes.
"The iconograph I borrowed from the tourist."
"I don't know what you're talking about," said Vimes.
"But you..."
"I can't see you going very far in the watch, Captain, if you go around seeing things that aren't there."
"Oh."
The clock seemed to tick louder.
"You're thinking something, aren't you, sir?"
"It is a use to which I occasionally put my brain, Captain, strange as it may seem."
"What are you thinking, sir?"
"What they want me to think," said Vimes.
"Who's they?"
"I don't know yet. One step at a time." A bell tinkled. Vimes stood up. "You know what I always say," he said. Carrot removed his helmet and polished it with his sleeve.
"Yes, sir. Everyone's guilty of something, especially the ones that aren't, sir."
"No, not that one."
Always take into consideration the fact that you might be dead wrong, sir."
"No, nor that one neither."
How come Nobby ever got a job as a watchman, sir? You say that a lot."
"No, I meant always act stupid, Carrot."
"Ah, right, sir. From now on I shall remember that you always said that, sir."
They put their helmets under their arms. Vimes knocked at the door.
"Come," said a voice.
The patrician was standing at the window. Sitting or standing around the office were Lord Rust and the others. Vimes never quite understood how the civic leaders were chosen. They just seemed to turn up, like a tack on the sole of your shoe.
"Ah, Vimes," said Vetinari. "Sir,
Let us not beat about the bush, Vimes. How did the man get up there when your people had so thoroughly checked everything last night? Magic? Couldn't say, sir.
Carrot, still staring straight ahead, blinked.
Your people did check the barbican, I assume?
No, sir.
They didn't?
No, sir. I did that myself.
You physically checked it yourself, Vimes, said Boggis of the Thieves' Guild.
Captain Carrot could feel Vimes's thoughts at this point.
That is correct, Boggis, said Vimes without turning his head. But we think someone got in where the windows are boarded up and pulled the boards back after him. Dust has been disturbed and...
And you didn't spot this, Vimes?
Vimes sighed.
It'd be hard enough to spot the nailed back boards in daylight, Boggis, let alone in the middle of the night.
Not that we did, he added to himself. Angua smelled the scent on them. Lord Vetinari sat down at his desk.
The situation is grave, Vimes.
Yes, sir.
His Highness is very seriously injured, and Prince Cadram, we understand, is beside himself with rage.
They insist on keeping his brother in the embassy, said Lord Rust. A studied insult, as if we haven't good surgeons in this city.
That's right, of course, said Vimes, and many of them could give him a decent shave and a haircut, too.
Are you making fun of me, Vimes?
Certainly not, my lord, said Vimes. In my opinion, no surgeons anywhere have cleaner sawdust on their floors than the ones in this city.
Rust glared at him. The patrician coughed.
You have identified the assassin? Said the patrician.
Carrot was expecting Vimes to say, alleged assassin, sir, but instead he said,
yes, he was called Ossie Brunt, sir. No other name that we know. Lived in Market Street, did odd jobs from time to time, bit of a loner. No relatives or friends that we can find. We are making inquiries.
And that's all you fellows know, said Lord Downey.
It took some time to identify him, sir, said Vimes stolidly.
Oh, why should that be?
Couldn't give you the technical answer, sir, but it looked to me like they wouldn't need to make him a coffin. They could just have posted him between two barn doors.
Was he acting alone?
We only found the one body, sir, and a lot of recently fallen masonry, so it looks...
I meant, does he belong to any organisation? Any suggestion that he's anti-Clatchian?
Apart from him trying to kill one?
Inquiries are continuing.
Are you taking this seriously, Vimes?
I have put my best men on the job, sir. Who's looking worried? Sergeant Colon and Corporal Nobbs. Who's looking relieved? Very experienced men, the keystones of the watch.
Colon and Nobbs, said the patrician.
Really?
Yes, sir. Their gazes met very briefly.
We're getting some very threatening noises, Vimes, said Vetinari.
What can I say, sir? I saw someone up on the tower, I ran. Someone shot the prince with an arrow, and then I found the man at the bottom of the tower very obviously dead with a broken bow and a lot of rock beside him. The storm last night probably loosened things up. I can't make up facts that don't exist, sir.
Carrot watched the faces round the table. The general expression was one of relief.
A lone bowman, said Vetinari, an idiot with some kind of mad grudge, who died in the execution of the attempted execution. And, of course, valiant action by our watchman probably at least prevented an immediately fatal shot.
Valiant action, said Downey. I know Captain Carrot here ran towards the VIPs and Vimes headed for the tower, but frankly, Vimes, your strange behaviour beforehand...
Somewhat immaterial now, said Lord Vetinari.
Once again he adopted a slightly faraway voice, as if reporting to somebody else.
If Commander Vimes had not slowed down the procession, the wretch would undoubtedly have got a much better shot. As it was, the man panicked. Yes, the prince possibly would accept that.
Prince? Said Vimes. But the poor devil... His brother, said the patrician. Oh, the nice one. Thank you, Commander, said the patrician. Thank you. Gentlemen, do not let me detain you. Oh, Vimes, just a brief word, if you would be so good. Not you, Captain Carrot. I'm sure someone is committing some crime somewhere. Vimes remained staring at the far wall while the room emptied. Vetinari left his chair and went over to the window. Strange days indeed, Commander, he said. Sir. For example, I gather that this afternoon Captain Carrot was on the roof of the Opera House firing arrows down towards the archery butts. Very keen lad, sir. It could well be that the distance between the Opera House and the targets is about the same, you know, as the distance between the top of the barbican and the spot where the prince was hit. Just fancy that, sir. Vetinari sighed. And why was he doing this? It's a funny thing, sir, but he was telling me just the other day that in fact it is still law that every citizen should do 1 hour's archery practice every day. Apparently the law was made in 1356 and it's never been... Do you know why I sent Captain Carrot away just now, Vimes? Couldn't say, sir. Captain Carrot is an honest young man, Vimes. Yes, sir. And did you know that he winces when he hears you tell a direct lie? Really, sir? Damn. I can't stand to see his poor face twitch all the time, Vimes. Very thoughtful of you, sir. Where was the second bowman, Vimes? Damn. Second bowman, sir? Have you ever had a hankering to go on the stage, Vimes? Yes, at the moment I'd leap on it wherever it's heading, thought Vimes. No, sir. Pity. I am certain you're a great loss to the acting profession. I believe you said that the man had put the boards back after him. Yes, sir. Nailed them back. Blast. Yes, sir. From the outside. Damn. Yes, sir. A particularly resourceful lone bowman, then. Vimes didn't bother to comment. Vetinari sat down at his desk, raised his steepled fingers to his lips, and stared at Vimes over the top of them. Coulon and Nobbs are investigating this. Really? Yes, sir. If I were to ask you why, you'd pretend not to understand? Vimes let his forehead wrinkle in honest perplexity. Sir? If you say sir again in that stupid voice, Vimes, I swear there will be trouble. They're good men, sir. However, some people might consider them to be unimaginative, stolid, and... how can I put this? Possessed of an inbuilt disposition to accept the first explanation that presents itself and then bunk off somewhere for a quiet smoke? A certain lack of imagination, an ability to get out of their depth on a wet pavement, a tendency to rush to judgment. I hope you're not impugning my men, sir. Vimes, Sergeant Coulon and Corporal Nobbs have never been puned in their entire lives. Sir, and yet in fact we do not need complications, Vimes, an ingenious lone madman. Well, there are many madmen. A regrettable incident. Yes, sir. The man was looking harassed, and Vimes felt there was room for a pinch of sympathy. Fred and Nobby don't like complications either, sir. We need simple answers, Vimes. Sir, Fred and Nobby are good at simple. The patrician turned away and looked out over the city. Ah, he said in a quieter voice. Simple men to see the simple truth. This is a fact, sir. You are learning fast, Vimes. Couldn't say about that, sir. And when they have found the simple truth, Vimes? Can't argue with the truth, sir. In my experience, Vimes, you can argue with anything. When Vimes had gone, Lord Vetinari sat at his desk for a while, staring at nothing. Then he took a key from a drawer and walked across to a wall where he pressed a particular area. There was a rattle of a counterweight. The wall swung back.
the patrician walked softly through the narrow passageway beyond. Here and there it was illuminated by a very faint glow from around the edges of the little panels, which, if gently slid back, would allow someone to look out through the eye sockets of a handy portrait. They were a relic of a previous ruler. Vetinari never bothered with them. Looking out of someone else's eyes wasn't the trick. There was a certain amount of travel up dark stairways and along musty corridors. Occasionally he'd make movements the meaning of which might not be readily apparent. He'd touch a wall here and here, apparently without thinking as he passed. Along one stone-flagged passage, lit only by the grey light from a window forgotten by everyone except the most optimistic flies, he appeared to play a game of hopscotch, robes flying around him and calves twinkling as he skipped from stone to stone. These various activities did not seem to cause anything to happen. Eventually, he reached a door which he unlocked. He did this with some caution. The air beyond was full of acrid smoke, and a steady pop-pop sound which he had begun to hear further back along the passage was now quite loud. It faltered for a moment, was followed by a much louder bang, and then a piece of hot metal whirled past the patrician's ear and buried itself in the wall. In the smoke, a voice said,
"Oh, dear."
It didn't seem unhappy, but sounded rather like the voice one might use to a sweet and ingratiating little puppy, which, despite one's best efforts, is sitting next to a spreading damp patch on the carpet. As the billows cleared, the indistinct shape of the speaker turned to Vetinari with a wan little smile and said,
"Fully 15 seconds this time, my lord. There is no doubt that the principle is sound."
That was one of Leonard of Querm's traits. He picked up conversations out of the air, he assumed everyone was an interested friend, and he took it for granted that you were as intelligent as he was. Vetinari peered at a small heap of bent and twisted metal. "What was it, Leonard?" he said.
"An experimental device for turning chemical energy into rotary motion," said Leonard. "The problem, you see, is getting the little pellets of black powder into the combustion chamber at exactly the right speed, and one at a time. If two ignite together, well, what we have is the external combustion engine."
"And what would be the purpose of it?" said the patrician.
"I believe it could replace the horse," said Leonard proudly.
They looked at the stricken thing. "One of the advantages of horses that people often point out," said Vetinari after some thought, "is that they very seldom explode. Almost never, in my experience, apart from that unfortunate occurrence in the hot summer a few years ago." With fastidious fingers, he pulled something out of the mess. It was a pair of cubes made out of some soft white fur and linked together by a piece of string. There were dots on them.
"Dice," he said.
Leonard smiled in an embarrassed fashion.
"Yes, I can't think why I thought they'd help it go better. It was just, well, an idea. You know how it is?"
Lord Vetinari nodded. He knew how it was. He knew how it was far more than Leonard of Querm did, which was why there was one key to the door, and he had it. Not that the man was a prisoner, except by dull humdrum standards. He appeared rather grateful to be confined in this light, airy attic with as much wood, paper, sticks of charcoal and paint as he desired, and no rent or food bills to pay. In any case, you couldn't really imprison someone like Leonard of Querm. The most you could do was lock up his body. The gods alone knew where his mind went. And although he had so much cleverness it leaked continually, he couldn't tell you which way the political wind was blowing, even if you fitted him with sails. Leonard's incredible brain sizzled away alarmingly, an overloaded chip pan on the stove of life. It was impossible to know what he would think of next, because he was constantly reprogrammed by the whole universe. The sight of a waterfall or a soaring bird would send him spinning down some new path of practical speculation that invariably ended in a heap of wire and springs and a cry of, "I think I know what I did wrong!" He'd been a member of most of the craft guilds in the city, but had been thrown out for getting impossibly high marks in the exams, or in some cases, correcting the questions. It was said that he'd accidentally blown up the alchemist's guild, using nothing more than a glass of water, a spoonful of acid, two lengths of wire, and a ping-pong ball. Any sensible ruler would have killed off Leonard, and Lord Vetinari was extremely sensible, and often wondered why he had not done so. He decided that it was because
imprisoned in the priceless inquiring amber of Leonard's massive mind, underneath all that bright investigative genius, was a kind of willful innocence that might in lesser men be called stupidity. It was the seat and soul of that force which down the millennia had caused mankind to stick its fingers in the electric light socket of the universe and play with the switch to see what happened, and then be very surprised when it did. It was, in short, something useful. And if the patrician was anything, he was the political equivalent of the old lady who saves bits of string because you never know when they might come in handy. After all, you couldn't plan for every eventuality, because that would involve knowing what was going to happen. And if you knew what was going to happen, you could probably see to it that it didn't, or at least happened to someone else. So the patrician never planned. Plans often got in the way. And finally, he kept Leonard around because the man was easy to talk to. He never understood what Lord Vetinari was talking about. He had a world view about as complex as that of a concussed duckling, and above all, never really paid attention. This made him an excellent confidant. After all, when you seek advice from someone, it's certainly not because you want them to give it. You just want them to be there while you talk to yourself.
"I've just made some tea," said Leonard. "Will you join me?"
He followed the patrician's gaze to a brown stain all up one wall, which ended in a star of molten metal in the plaster.
"I'm afraid the automatical tea engine went wrong," he said. "I shall have to make it by hand."
"So kind," said Lord Vetinari. He sat down amidst the easels, and while Leonard busied himself at the fireplace, leafed through the latest sketches. Leonard sketched as automatically as other people scratched. Genius, a certain kind of genius, fell off him like dandruff. There was a picture of a man drawing, the lines catching the figure so accurately it appeared to stand out of the paper. And around it, because Leonard never wasted white space, were other sketches, scattered aimlessly. A thumb, a bowl of flowers, a device apparently for sharpening pencils by water power. Vetinari found what he was looking for in the bottom left-hand corner, sandwiched between a sketch for a new type of screw and a tool for opening oysters. It, or something very much like it, was always there, somewhere. One of the things that made Leonard such a rare prize, and kept him under such secure lock and key, was that he really didn't see any difference between the thumb and the roses and the pencil sharpener, and this.
"Ah, the self-portrait," said Leonard, returning with two cups.
"Yes, indeed," said Vetinari. "But my eye was drawn to this little sketch here. The war machine."
"Oh, that, mere nothing. Have you ever noticed the way in which the dew on roses..."
"This bit here, what is it for?" said Vetinari, pointing persistently.
"Oh, that's just the throwing arm for the balls of molten sulphur," said Leonard, picking up a plate of small cakes. "I calculate that one should get a range of almost half a mile, if one detaches the endless belt from the driving wheels and uses the oxen to wind the windlass."
"Really?" said Vetinari, taking in the carefully numbered parts. "And it could be built?"
"What? Oh, yes. Macaroon, in theory."
"In theory?
No one would ever actually do it, raining unquenchable fire down upon fellow humans."
Leonard sprayed macaroon crumbs.
"You'd never find an artisan to build it, or a soldier who would pull the lever." "That's part 3B on the plan, just here, look."
"Ah, yes," said Vetinari. "Anyway," he added, "I imagine these huge power arms here couldn't possibly be operated without them breaking."
"Season Dash and you laminated and held together by special steel bolts," said Leonard promptly. "I made a few calculations just there below the sketch of light on a raindrop, as an intellectual exercise, obviously."
Vetinari ran his eye along several lines of Leonard's spidery mirror writing.
"Oh, yes,"
he said glumly. He put the paper aside.
"Have I told you that the Clatchian situation is intensely political? Prince Kadram is trying to do a great deal very fast. He needs to consolidate his position. He is depending on support that is somewhat volatile. There are many plotting against him, I understand."
"Really?
Well, this is the sort of thing people do, said Leonard. Incidentally, I've recently been examining cobwebs, and I know this will interest you. Their strength in relation to their weight is much greater even than our best steel wire. Isn't that fascinating? What kind of weapon do you intend to make out of them? Said the patrician. Sorry? Oh, nothing. I was just thinking aloud. And you haven't touched your tea, said Leonard. Vetinari looked around the room. It was full of things, tubes and odd paper kites, and things that looked like the skeletons of ancient beasts. One of Leonard's saving graces, in a very real sense, from Vetinari's point of view, was his strange attention span. It wasn't that he soon got bored with things. He didn't seem to get bored with anything. But since he was interested in everything in the universe all the time, the end result tended to be that an experimental device for disemboweling people at a distance then became a string-weaving machine and ended up as an instrument for ascertaining the specific gravity of cheese. He was as easily distracted as a kitten. All that business with the flying machine, for example, giant bat wings hung from the ceiling even now. The patrician had been more than happy to let him waste his time on that idea because it was obvious to anyone that no human being would ever be able to flap the wings hard enough. He needn't have worried. Leonard was his own distraction. He had ended up spending ages designing a special tray so that people could eat their meals in the air. A truly innocent man. And yet always, always some little part of him would sketch these wretchedly beguiling engines with their clouds of smoke and carefully numbered engineering diagrams. What's this? Vetinari said, pointing to yet another doodle. It showed a man holding a large metal sphere. That, something of a toy, really. Makes use of the strange properties of some otherwise quite useless metals. They don't like being squeezed, so they go bang, with extreme alacrity. Another weapon? Certainly not, my lord. It would be no possible use as a weapon. I did think it might have a place in the mining industries, though. Really? For when they need to move mountains out of the way? Tell me, Vetinari said, putting this paper aside as well, you don't have any relatives in Klatch, do you? I don't believe so. My family lived in Quirm for generations. Oh, good. But, very clever people in Klatch, are they? Oh, in many disciplines they practically wrote the scroll. Fine metalwork, for example? Metalwork, the patrician sighed. And alchemy, of course. Afia Alchema's Principia Explosia has been the seminal work for more than 100 years. Alchemy, said the patrician glumly. Sulphur and so forth. Yes, indeed. But the way you put it, these major achievements were some considerable time ago. Lord Vetinari sounded like a man straining to see a light at the end of the tunnel. Certainly, I would be astonished if they haven't made considerable progress, said Leonard of Quirm happily. Ah. The patrician sank a little in his chair. It had turned out that the end of the tunnel was on fire. A splendid people, with much to recommend them, said Leonard. I always thought it was the presence of the desert. It leads to an urgency of thought. It makes you aware of the briefness of life. The patrician glanced at another page. Between a sketch of a bird's wing and a careful drawing of a ball joint was a little doodle of something with spiked wheels and spinning blades. And then there was the device for moving mountains aside. The desert is not required, he said. He sighed again and pushed the pages aside. Have you heard about the lost continent of Leshp? He said. Oh, yes, I did some sketches there a few years ago, said Leonard. Some interesting aspects, I recall. More tea? I fear you've let that one get cold. Was there anything you particularly wanted? The patrician pinched the bridge of his nose. I'm not sure. There is a small problem developing. I thought perhaps you could help. Unfortunately, the patrician glanced at the sketches again. I suspect that you can. He stood up, straightened his robe, and forced a smile. You have everything that you require?
Some more wire would be nice, said Leonard, and I have run out of burnt umber.
I shall have some sent along directly, said Vetinari. And now, if you will excuse me, he let himself out. Leonard nodded happily as he cleared away the teacups. The infernal combustion engine was carried to the heap of scrap metal beside the small forge, and he fetched a ladder and removed the piston from the ceiling. He'd just opened out his easel to start working on a new design when he was aware of a distant pattering. It sounded like someone running, but also occasionally pausing to hop sideways on one leg. Then there was a pause, such as might be made by someone adjusting their clothing and getting their breath back. The door opened and the patrician returned. He sat down and looked carefully at Leonard of Querm.
You did what? He said.
Thank you.